Hey everybody, my name is Jason and I am an alcoholic. And so they want us to when we're up here talk about what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. And so what it was like for me is, you know, I moved around a lot when I was a kid growing up. My dad was actually a preacher and we were a missionary family and we lived overseas in Spain. And so because of my dad's job, we were always kind of packing up and moving and going to a new school and making a bunch of new friends. And it was always time to be on and always be trying to worry about what you guys thought about me, what everybody else thought about me. Now, I didn't want to ever say the wrong thing or make the wrong kind of impression on anybody. And that was kind of something that I carried with me while I was growing up until I discovered drinking. And suddenly when I discovered drinking, it kind of took away that being afraid of what other people thought or even caring what anybody thought. All of a sudden it was like I was okay with myself. I was all right in my own skin. I didn't care what anybody thought about me. And you know, it's like a lot of people describe, you know, all of a sudden I'm taller, I'm more good looking, I'm more buff, you know, I can talk to people. And it was like, you know, everything's all of a sudden fit, and I felt okay with myself, and it worked for a while. It worked for me for a few years, and it was like I started getting into trouble and like little things here and there. And I remember coming to the U.S. When we moved back, I was starting in the ninth grade, and I remember I was actually in Casa Bonita, and we were going out to eat, and we just came back to the U.S. And I remember seeing that sign, you know, that says you have to be 21 years old to drink alcohol, and it's a crime to give alcohol to a person with under 21 years of age. And my heart just kind of sank down and just, oh, I got to wait 6 years before I'm going to be able to drink legally. And it was just like this devastating blow, you know, that I wasn't going to be able to drink. And but as a lot of you guys probably know, I figured out ways to get alcohol, you know, and it was just, that was our thing, you know. We were just drinking and partying, and that was what we did. And I would associate with the people that did the same things that I did and that drank like I did. So it seemed normal to me to want to drink all night long or drink until it was all gone. And because of that, I was drinking a lot as a teenager, and it was hard for me to get any real consequences because the booze would always run out. You know, we would buy a bunch of these 40s, and they would be all gone by, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning before anybody gets too crazy. And it's like, so, you know, there's no problem. You know, everything's okay. And like I said, I started getting in trouble. First it's the, you know, the minor in possession charge, and then it's, you know, I'm getting two or three and four of those, and I'm getting probation, you know, and then they're putting me on probation and they're giving me UAs, and it's like, all right, so I'm not going to do any more weed or any of that stuff, you know. And, you know, drugs are a part of my story, but I'm not a real big one. But so I'm getting into trouble, and as more time goes by, the trouble starts to get worse, you know. Then I graduate to DUIs, you know, and I go in for my, you know, DUI classes, and I remember I went to this Halloween party. Like my favorite method to try to control my drinking was that I would stop at midnight, you know, and I remember I was at this kegger, you know, and whenever I'd be at a kegger, I was always the guy with the tap in his hand, because I wanted to always have my cup full. And the best way to do that is to be the guy with the tap in your hand and, you know, filling up the other people. And then, you know, I got to fill up mine now, you know. And so I remember I stopped at midnight, but, you know, I had drank probably 10 or 15 drinks. And I came in the next day for the first alcohol classes ever on my first DUI. And it was, and they were like, we smell alcohol on you. And they gave me the breath test, and I, you know, blew hot. It was like really small numbers, but it was still enough. And they called my probation, and they said, we're going to get him on the Anabuse then. And if you guys don't know what that is, it's this pill they give you. Whenever you drink, the alcohol turns to formaldehyde in your bloodstream, and you get really, really sick and like throwing up. And so I didn't drink on the Anabuse, but that whole time that I was sober, I wasn't doing any of the other drugs or anything like that. I was just stone, totally bone dry, like we say around here. But every minute of that, I was always, if I was awake, I was telling myself, I'm gonna catch up, you know, I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna really hit it when I get off this Anabuse stuff and, you know, make up for lost time. And so what happened was, in the same summer, they let me off this Anabuse stuff, and I went on this trip back to Spain to visit my friends. And I decided that summer that it was okay for me to use drugs. All of a sudden, you know, it became okay for me when I was in this kind of catching up. You know, it was like, if I'm going to catch up on my party, and I'm okay now, if I can do some other things. And so by the end of the summer that I turned 21, I'm going to bars every day, and I'm starting to mess around with drugs a little bit more. And somehow I landed myself in this mental hospital in Louisville. It's called Centennial Peaks. And I had been running away from this place, and you know, they would say, well, what, how come you're not allowed to have shoes? And I'll say, oh, give me my shoes, and you'll find out. And they give me my shoes, and then I would like jump over the fence and take off running, you know. And then a few days later, the cops would pick me up and throw me back in there because the hospital, and you know, would put warrants out or whatever. And so I remember I'm about 2 weeks into this place, and I found out that my insurance was going to run out, so the medical insurance was going to finish. And in my own sick thinking, I thought, okay, no more insurance. They can't pay for the bill. They got to cut me loose, right? Well, that wasn't what happened. The head shrink of the place came to me with this letter in his hand and into my room, and he goes, you know, we need you to sign this document, you know, and you need to start doing what it says on this document. And I told him, you know, basically to, you know, take the paper and put it where the sun don't shine, you know, but I didn't talk like that. I said worse stuff to him. And so, you know, he left. He leaves the paper in there. Before he left the room, he says, well, if you don't do this, if you don't start complying and, you know, and start doing everything we're asking you to do here, we're gonna turn you over to the state, and then you'll become a ward of the state, and you might never see the outside of a hospital for the rest of your life. And when I heard that, it was a serious deal all of a sudden. You know, it was like the wheels had fallen off the car. It was like the whole thing had hit a brick wall, you know, and I knew I didn't want that to happen, you know. It really felt like the party was over for me, and that I didn't want to be locked up forever, like this guy was talking about. So that night in the room, I wasn't sure if I believed in God or not, or if I really believed there was a God. But I got down on my knees and I begged for him to get me out of that. And I said, please, just get me out of this. You know, I'll do whatever you want me to do. And so the next morning, you know, I signed their document, and I did what they, you know, did everything they were wanting me to do. And one of the things was to attend the weekly AA meeting in this hospital. And I've actually been back there. It was funny, I went back to the meeting, and they were like, oh, you did treatment here? And I was like, I didn't call it treatment when I was here. but it was pretty great going back there, too. But so I started going to these meetings, and, you know, I was a cross-talker, and I was a talk-out-of-turn kind of person during those meetings. But something actually got through, and I think that was God reaching down and touching me for that first time. You know, we talk about in here that God recognizes any kind of move in His direction, and I think me making that prayer, it was answered by Him putting this seed in me about Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd love to tell you guys that I walked out of the hospital and stayed sober, but that's not what happened. I still had to prove to myself that I wasn't an alcoholic. I had some information about AA, and I was going to prove that I'm not an alcoholic. And the way I did that was I was going to control my drinking, and I was going to count how many drinks I was having. I was going to make sure that, you know, I was always the one deciding how much I was going to drink and if I was going to drink. And I would do things like bring a pen with me to the bar, and I would write on my fingers how many drinks I would have, and then I would wake up in the morning, and I'd be like covered in puke or urine or whatever, and the ink would be all smeared all over the place, and I would go, well, I guess that plan didn't work. I'll try something else. You know, and so I went on like that for a few more years, and I started piling up more of these DUIs. And finally on the fourth one, they decided they didn't like that very much anymore, and they threw me in jail. And so I went to do a year sentence in the Boulder County Jail, and so I was in there, and still didn't want to admit I was an alcoholic. Still didn't want to admit there was really a problem with my drinking. It was always just, if those cops would just leave me alone, and if those shrinks would just quit trying to say I'm crazy, you know, everything would be okay, you know. And so I sat in this jail for 8 months on a year sentence, and every day I was in there, I would promise myself that I wasn't going to get in trouble again, and I promised myself that this wasn't going to happen again. I wasn't going to end up back in jail. But I wasn't going to meetings. I went to one meeting just because somebody, one of my friends in there, suggested I go. But I only went to the one, and I remember I found out later that this is actually the obsession of alcoholism that And they let me out of this jail. They gave me this special probation where I had to check in with them everywhere I was going. I had to tell them, I'm going to work now, and then I'd go to work, and then I'd call them up, I'm going home now, and every place that you go, you had to tell them where you were going, and they had me on breath tests and UAs and everything. And I remember sitting there in my job, I'm working in this gas station, and the thought kind of came into my mind, why don't you have a couple of drinks? You could get away with it. You've earned it. You deserve it. And around here, that they describe that as the obsession of alcoholism, that even though I've got lots of good reasons not to drink, that this thought will pop into my head that tells me that drinking is a good idea. And so I went across the street to the liquor store, and I got a couple of 32s, and me and my friend poured them into the cups, the gas station cup, and so we're drinking there on the job, and it went so well that I didn't get in trouble the next day or anything, and I thought, hey, this is working out pretty good. Within a week later, I'm back in that same jail, sitting in the intake. It's 24-hour lockdown. You get a lot of time to think about what's going on, and I'm asking myself, how did this happen? How come I'm back in jail after I promised myself all those days that I was in there that it wasn't going to happen again? Here I am again, and I had told myself it was okay to drink, and the next thing I know, I'm back in that jail. And I finished out my jail sentence, and amazingly enough, I didn't get into a whole lot more trouble for a couple more years. But just because I wasn't having legal problems, I was still an alcoholic, and I still had a lot of other consequences in my life. My relationships were falling apart, and I was having a lot of people that were kind of starting to drop off that didn't want to be around me anymore because of the way I got when I would drink. And until finally, on New Year's, the first hours of 2003, I'm driving. We went to this big party where it was an open bar and in like an old governor's mansion on downtown Denver, and my friend was a lot drunker than I was, my date. She was like falling down and throwing up and everything, and so the valet's giving us the car, and I said, well, I guess I have to drive the car, because she's falling down, she'll crash it, and so I get behind the wheel of her car, and I crashed into the back of another car in Colfax and Grant, downtown Denver, right on the top of the Capitol Hill. And that was DUI number 5, and I'm sitting in the back of this cop car going, how come I keep doing this to myself? Why do I keep doing this to myself over and over? And so I'd already done the jail thing, and I decided I don't jail very well, and I'm not going to try that one again. So I was starting to kind of grasp for ideas of what am I going to do now. And my same friend that I crashed her car, she said that her dad kind of got out of going to jail by going to treatment, and that the judge let him do a treatment stay instead of having to go straight to jail. And I thought that sounded better than going to jail. So I started calling around, and this one was $10,000, and that one was $25,000. And I was like, well, I don't have $25,000 or $10,000. And then I found one that was free, and all you got to do was go in there and work for them. And they didn't give you a lot of information about it. But I went over there, and I ended up checking into this place, and it was 6 months long. And it was like, all right, 6 whole months that I don't have to be in jail. Well, I'm in there for about the first 2 weeks, and my plan was that I'm just going to lie to them like I'd lie to everybody else. My whole drinking, it was always, I'll tell you what I think you want to hear if that's going to get you to lay off me and leave me alone about my drinking. And and they pretty much saw right through me, and they said, you're going to have to get a real program, and you're going to have to get honest about what's really going on with you, or we're going to kick you out of here. And so I'm in there, and they're getting ready to kick me out for just not doing anything. And I remember sitting in one of these meetings that they would bring into the treatment center, and the guy was talking about alcoholism. And I remember what I used to do when I would sit in these meetings is the people would talk, and they would be describing their drinking, and I would kind of listen to what they were saying, but I would wait for something about the speaker to be a little bit different than me, so I could point the finger at that person and say, I didn't do that, I'm not like that person is, I'm not an alcoholic. And I would just kind of close off my ears and stop listening. Well, finally I'm in this place, and this guy's talking about his drinking, right? And he was actually talking about waking up in a puddle of his own urine. And I thought to myself, all right, well, this guy wouldn't say that just to impress me or to make me feel better or to like make me feel more comfortable. That's probably something that really has happened to him. And then my next thought was, well, here he is, he's talking about it, and it doesn't embarrass him to say that. And it was like, and that's happened to me a few times, and that really embarrassed me a lot. And I just kind of was enough to shock me into listening to what the rest of what this guy had to say, which is the message of AA, that I didn't have to keep on living my life that way anymore, that I didn't have to keep on doing those kinds of things, and that whatever my consequences look like, that I didn't have to keep having them if I was willing to grab onto this program and do some of the suggestions that we have. And so pretty soon after that, I started, you know, getting around the people that were doing the deal and in that place. And as soon as they let me out to do some outside meetings, I met this guy and asked him to be my sponsor. And you know, we started this process of sitting down and you know, doing the steps the only way I know how, which is to sit down and read the book Alcoholics Anonymous and discuss what it says in that book. And he would explain to me how it related to his sobriety and how it helped him. And he would take examples from his own life and how they related to what the book was describing. And then when there was instructions, he would ask me to do some things. And you know, and through that process, I started to get this recovery thing. And I won't describe all of my step work, but a couple of them that were really kind of like game changers for me. The four step. I don't say this to scare you guys, but just so you guys don't make the same mistake that I did if you haven't been through it. I was a half measurer. It says half measures availed as nothing, and that's exactly what I did when I first got to the four step. We went over all the instructions, and we sat down. We talked about what I was supposed to be doing, and then I went back to the treatment center where I was staying at to work on my four step. And there's a part in that four step that asked me some questions about what's my part, where it says, where had I been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, and afraid. And the way that I was working it was, where had I been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, or afraid? And there's an important difference between the word and the word or. And means I got to answer all those questions, and I got to put all those words into a question form and make an answer for it. Or means I can pick and choose whichever one I want. And I was doing it like or, and I was picking and choosing and saying, all right, I might have been selfish here, and then I would answer, and then I would move on. Well, my sponsor didn't really appreciate that I was doing it that way. And he was this big guy. He was about 250 pounds and 6'5". And I remember I sat down in his apartment to read this half-measured four-step to him. And I start reading it, you know, and he jumps up out of his chair, and he grabs the notebook out of my lap, and he says, "This is bull. You didn't do any of what I asked you to do. You need to answer all of these questions. You need to answer everything and find an answer to each one of these defects, for each one of these resentments." And I remember him, he's yelling at me, and it's like, I know he's bigger than me, and I know he's sober. So I wanted to punch him, but I knew that wouldn't be a good idea, because he'd probably beat me up. So I just sat there, and I listened to what he was saying, which was that I was either going to do this program the way it's described in the book and answer all those questions, or I could hit the road and I could have my misery back. And so I left his place, and you know, up until that point, the fourth step was real easy, but after that, it was difficult, and it was hard for me to find all those answers to those questions. But I started asking people around me. I would look for the people in that treatment that were also on the fourth step and ask for their help. And if I was confused about something, I would call up my sponsor and I would ask him, you know, how do I do this part? You know, and I started really putting the effort into it that I needed, because the lying and the conning and the manipulating wasn't going to fly when it came to doing the work of this program. That con wasn't going to be able to fly with doing this work. And you know, and so I got through that part, and you know, and did it as honest as I could. And you know, and I started to grow. But for me, it's like I didn't feel better right away. I might have started to change a little bit, but it's like the book talks about that the friends of the newcomer notice before he does. And that's kind of how it was for me. I was still kind of walking around in my own head, calling myself a piece of garbage, when really I was growing and I was making some progress. But when I finally got to that nine-step part and I was going to make those amends to people, a really amazing thing happened. When I was going to make amends to my mom and dad, and I had done some pretty rotten stuff to them. I pretty much milked them for all I could with money, but I had also basically made them a criminal by association. I would run, you know, I'd skip my court dates, and then I'd be staying in their house, and I'd have court, you know, warrants from this county and that county and the other county, and you know, therefore they're harboring a fugitive by me even staying in their house. So when I go to make this amends to them, you know, the way my sponsor described it, that I tell the person, you know, here's what I did to you, and I'm sorry for doing that. And then I say, what can I do to make this better? And then I shut my mouth and I listen to what that person has to say. And my mom, she says to me, you know, just keep doing what you're doing for your sobriety. Keep going to your meetings and doing all those things that you need to do for sobriety, because we missed you when you were out there wasting away your life, you know. And for the first time ever, it was like, I can really do this. You know, I can really be one of those people that I hear in the meetings that enjoy their lives and that are getting the most that they can out of this program, you know. And so from there on, it was like, you know, I got on fire with AA and was kind of riding that pink cloud that we talk about, you know. And things were really great. And a lot of the outside circumstances of my life started getting really good. You know, I got out of treatment center. They gave me a job with the same people, and you know, I had a job. I went back to college and got my degree. I got married, and now I have two beautiful daughters that have never seen me drink. And you know, things started getting better and better. But they didn't necessarily stay that way. I kind of got to this place of complacency, where I was not doing as much as I had done in the beginning of my sobriety. You know, I liked a lot of the different meetings around town, and I had lived in a couple different parts of Denver, so I was going to meetings in Denver, and I was going in Aurora, and I was coming here, and so I was like all over town. I might as well have been introducing myself as a visitor at each one of those meetings, because I would only show up to them. I'm only doing three meetings a week, and I'm going to four or five different clubs, so I might as well be saying I'm a visitor, because you're not going to see me again for two more weeks. And it's real hard to get connected to the program and get connected to people when you're doing that. And at the same time, it was kind of like my wife was saying, well, do you really need to go to so many meetings? And I would say, well, maybe I don't. You know. And so I was only going to a couple meetings a week. My first sponsor that I had that had got me through the steps, we kind of had a couple of conflicts of interest, where he'd come to work at my job. And so we just kind of decided it was time to part ways. Well, this other guy that I asked to be my sponsor was also my alcohol counselor. I was still doing the alcohol classes well into my sobriety. So he says, you know, I can't be your sponsor because of my job, and there's a conflict there. And so instead of asking somebody else, I just kind of was like, oh, well, I guess I don't really need a sponsor right now. And so I'm not going to enough meetings. I don't have a sponsor. I'm not sponsoring other people. You know, my main commitment was a meeting in this treatment, but I also worked there. So it was like, I'm not supposed to sponsor those guys. So they're asking me, but I can't tell them yes. And it's like, my program is just kind of getting by on a thread. And I paid a real heavy cost for that. I started to behave in the way that I used to behave when I drank. You know, especially in my marriage, I started to treat my wife the way that I used to treat people when I was drinking. You know, that's a result of me not doing the things I need to do to stay spiritually fit. And so we had a time when it was just fighting and fighting and fighting, and you know, three, four nights a week we would just be arguing, you know, until 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm getting up and going to my job, you know, 4 hours later, and it's just wearing on me and wearing on me. And then the end of that was, we had this huge fist fight, basically. You know, the cops got called, and we both got charged with domestic violence. And you know, so I'm sitting back in a jail cell again with almost 5 years of sobriety, going, how did this happen? You know, and it was like time to really take a look at, what did I been doing in my program? You know, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing, or am I doing just enough? You know, our co-founder Bill Wilson talks about that good can be the enemy of great. You know, and that's kind of what was happening to me. You know, I got a new sponsor at that time, and started getting back into the step work. I started coming to the same meeting here, coming on a regular basis and getting to know people. You know, and eventually the domestic violence charge went away, and you know, that part cleared itself up. But I understood that I needed to really step up my game when it came to, what am I doing for this program? You know, and there could be people out there that can get by on two meetings a week, but I'm not one of them. You know, and I need to do this thing like my life depends on it, and like I'm brand new, because I want all that serenity and that peace. I don't want just a little bit of it. I want it all. You know, and the half measures are availing me nothing. You know, I want to be able to enjoy my life, and I want to be able to get along with the people in it, and I want to be able to, you know, be the best husband and father and AA member I can be. You know, so I got real fired back up with this program. You know, an amazing thing. One of my good friends told me while I was kind of having a lot of these problems in my marriage that you know, that one day maybe I'll be able to help somebody else get through something like that. And it's like it's almost like the words were divinely inspired, because now we have a group of people that we get together, young couples, and we just kind of fellowship and get together and hang out and talk about being married and Al-Anon and AA kind of situations. And it's like, you know, God can show me a different kind of way of doing it, you know, and all I have to do is stay willing and be willing to keep showing up and doing the things I need to do. And today I've been able to see another person get through the step work, and you know, it's just amazing when to watch this program take hold on somebody, and to watch this thing grab onto somebody as they clean themselves up. Because like I was saying, you know, when I was in the middle of step work, I didn't think I was getting any better. I still kind of would walk around telling myself I was a piece of garbage. But when I see somebody else do it, and when I see somebody else, their relationships and the way they react to life and the way they get along with other people, all of a sudden, it's like, you know, it's like a miracle. You know, I can really start to feel useful and start to feel like I'm getting the best that I can out of this. And so I'm real glad to be here speaking at my home group, and I'm glad to have a home group today and understand the importance of that. You know, that sponsor that I have now, he's a guy that's just on fire and doing all kinds of different things for AA, and it's like, I would watch him and I would say, I want what he has, and it was just like being brand new. I want what he has, I'm going to do what he does, you know, and I would follow this guy around, and, you know, and he's one that goes to the detoxes and the jails, and, you know, and it was like, you know, if I want to have what he has, then I got to do what he's doing, and it's been an awesome ride ever since. And it's like, I tell people, I've been coming to Vitality for 7 years, and I go, really? Because they didn't know me, you know. More than 3 years ago, most people didn't even know me, because I would just kind of pop in here and there, you know. And today it's different. Today I show up to the same place, and you know, and I get to know people, and it's like we're like a family here. So I'm real glad to be here, and thanks, Benita, for asking me to share. That's all I got.